Welcome to the Security Nexus Deep Dive. We're here to give you that critical edge, helping you stay informed on national security. We focus on strategic advisory, education, public engagement, things like cyber threats, hybrid warfare, strategic security policy. For more depth, you can always check us out at thesecuritynexus.net.
And today we're really digging into something that feels, well, increasingly urgent: deepfake diplomacy. Specifically, crisis management in an age of synthetic media. Our mission for you, the listener, is to get past the shock value and really understand the playbooks. How do we handle attribution, narrative control, technical defenses when things get serious on the world stage?
Yeah, this isn't just about some funny video swapping faces online. We're talking potential nation-state level crises. And our insights today, they come from some pretty solid research. We're drawing on work by folks like Jay Keatsman, IP McCarthy, T.C. Keatsman, L.W. Lee, Mikhail Mustak and his colleagues, Akash Varmanadimpalli and Ajita Ratani, J.W. So and co-authors, Rami Mubarak's team, and also really important work on strategic adaptation from Craig Height and Sam Gregory. Quite a foundation.
Definitely. And to really get a handle on the defense, we first have to understand the threat itself. What is a deepfake? Fundamentally, we're not talking basic Photoshop here. Deepfakes are media images, video, audio that have been manipulated or crucially generated using deep learning AI. The key thing is they're designed to be hyper-realistic, often, practically indistinguishable from the real deal for us humans.
That's kind of scary how good they've gotten and how fast. But for crisis management, the why it's dangerous comes down to the tech underneath, right? Mm-hmm. The sources talk about deep neural networks, DNNs, and specifically something called a generative adversarial network, a GN.
Right, the GN. And the way it works is, it's quite clever, actually. Think less like a computer just copying and pasting and more like an artist learning to capture the essence of a face. It uses what's called an autoencoder system.
Okay, break that down. Autoencoder.
So you have an encoder. It takes an image, say a face, and compresses it down. Mm. It learns all the critical features, the shape of the eyes, the line of the mouth, how light falls into this compact representation. That compressed bit is called the latent space.
Latent space.
Yeah.
Like the pure idea of the face, stripped of the actual pixels.
Exactly. It's an information bottleneck. Then the second part, the decoder, takes that compressed data from the latent space and reconstructs an image. But because it learned the rules of the face, not just the specific image, it can generate totally new images that look incredibly convincing. It's not just rearranging pixels, it's synthesizing.
And that's the core problem for diplomacy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It hits us where we're vulnerable. Mm. These things are believable and, maybe more worryingly, they're becoming so accessible.
Precisely. We're kind of hardwired to trust what we see and hear, especially voices we recognize or video footage. Our brains just aren't equipped to easily spot these sophisticated fakes.
That trust, combined with how easy it's becoming, that's the dangerous mix.
Absolutely. The sources point out, just a few years back, that Chinese app Zhao, all it needed was a few selfies, and suddenly anyone could put their face into a movie clip. That barrier to entry is plummeting. So state actors, yes, but also non-state groups, even individuals, could potentially create something that sparks a real crisis.
The research calls it systemic dimensions of harm. It's not just one fake video. We're looking at potential election meddling, sure, but also undermining public trust in institutions, even causing direct economic damage.
Oh, definitely economic damage. That case with the CEO who got scammed out of nearly $250,000, that was AI voice spoofing. They synthesized the voice of his boss. It wasn't theoretical. It was real money, real impact right now.
Okay, that really underscores the need for some kind of structured response. So the research proposes this REAL framework, right, as a sort of first phase.
Yes, REAO, four parts. R is for record. Record original content. Think of it as building an alibi service for high-profile people. Logging location, communications activities, often encrypted, stored securely so you can prove where you actually were, what you actually said.
Makes sense. Then E.
E is expose deepfakes early. The idea is rapid detection. The faster you spot it, the less time it has to spread and cause damage.
A is advocate for legal protection, which, as the sources note, is still kind of patchy, but it's evolving. Things like the EU AI Act wanting labels on synthetic content.
Right. And finally, L is leverage trust. This is crucial. If the content itself is suspect, you shift focus. You rely on the reputation of the source providing the information, use trusted intermediaries, rather than getting bogged down arguing if the pixels look right.
Okay. REAL seems like a solid starting point. But reading through the research that E's expose early, the detection part seems like it's already... while struggling.
That's putting it mildly. Yeah, it's the weak link. It's almost like the foundation is cracking before the building is even finished.
But why? We have AI making them. Why can't AI detect them just as well? Doesn't that kind of break the whole REAL idea, or at least the E part?
It certainly put huge pressure on it. See, these passive detection techniques, they're fundamentally reactive. They look for the leftovers, the digital breadcrumbs from the creation process. Tiny inconsistencies, weird blurring patterns, artifacts specific to known JAN models. Researchers use tools like CNN-based detectors, lip forensics that tracks tiny mouth movements.
Looking for the seams, basically.
Exactly. But the problem is the creators are always one step ahead, these detection tools. Their accuracy isn't great. They don't work well across different types of deepfakes or platforms. And critically, they're vulnerable to what are called adversarial attacks. The creator can intentionally tweak the fake just enough to fool the detector, but not enough for a human to notice.
So it really is that cat and mouse game the research talks about. We build a better detector.
And they build a better deepfake that slips past it.
Yeah.
It's a constant escalating race.
Which logically forces a change in strategy, right? If detection after the fact is unreliable.
You have to shift focus. You move from reaction to prevention. Protect the authentic content before it can be faked. And that brings us to phase two. Proactive defenses like watermarking and thinking about media provenance.
Okay, this feels like a critical pivot. Watermarking. Allowing the creator to kind of embed a defense. The sources detail two main types, visible and invisible.
That's right, and they serve different purposes. Let's start with the visible one, the abuse deterrent. This isn't just sticking a logo in the corner, it's more sophisticated. You actually train the generative model, the JAN itself, so that if someone tries to use it maliciously, it automatically embeds a visible mark, like a copyright symbol or a specific pattern, right into the output.
Whoa, okay, so you're building the alarm system into the tool that could be misused.
Precisely. You're not waiting to catch the fake. You're making the fake announce itself. And importantly, this kind of embedded visible watermark is designed to be really robust. Hard to remove, even if someone tries to mess with the model later. Its job is just to alert human eyes. Hold on, this is synthetic.
Okay, that's clever. But then there's the invisible kind, semi-fragile watermarking. This sounds like the really high-tech solution for authentication.
It is. This is where the authentic media basically becomes its own security device. You embed an invisible encrypted message within the original genuine media. Now here's the elegant part. This watermark needs to be robust against normal everyday changes.
Benign transformations, the research calls them.
Like what? Like compressing the file to upload it, maybe applying a simple filter, stuff that happens all the time on social media. The watermark needs to survive that. The sources use a measure called bit recovery accuracy, BRA. For these benign changes, the BRA is high, like 98%. The hidden message stays readable.
Right, so it survives normal handling. But what about the malicious changes, the deep fake manipulation?
That's where the fragile part comes in. The watermark is deliberately designed to be destroyed or rendered unreadable if someone applies a significant manipulation, like a deep fake facial swap. The BRA plummets, maybe down to around 49%. So the absence of a recoverable watermark becomes the signal. It screams tampering.
Ah, I see. So it's not about finding a hidden message in the fake. It's about the original hidden message being broken by the faking process.
Exactly. It flips the script. You're not trying to prove fakeness directly. You're demonstrating that the expected authenticity signal is gone. And this technical approach is feeding into real-world efforts. Coalitions like C2PA, the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity, are working on global standards. The goal is to build systems where this kind of provenance data, this history of authenticity, is baked into media from the start, potentially meeting requirements from regulations like the EU AI Act.
Okay, so the tech side is shifting towards protecting the original and signaling tampering. But let's face it, in a real diplomatic crisis, a deepfake drops, and the immediate battle is communication, narrative. That takes us to phase three, strategic adaptation.
Absolutely. Tech is crucial, but when a crisis hits, it's about managing the message. The focus shifts, drawing heavily on experience from, say, human rights groups like Witness. Their work talks about fortifying the truth. How do you strengthen the real story when synthetic versions are trying to drown it out?
And that's getting harder, right? Especially for groups relying on video or photo evidence.
Yeah.
Human rights defenders, for example.
What?
They already face immense pressure to provide proof.
Immense pressure, yeah. And deepfakes just make it worse. Plus, there's this risk of the CSI effect you mentioned earlier. If the public starts expecting flawless, high-tech, forensic proof for everything because the capability exists, what happens to legitimate evidence from groups that just don't have those resources? We can't let authenticity become a privilege.
So how do evidence standards need to adapt, realistically, if perfect technical proof isn't always feasible?
The thinking is shifting. Move beyond just documenting single incidents, build comprehensive databases showing patterns of behavior, systemic issues, make the overall story undeniable. Presentation matters too. Use better visualization, multiple camera angles if possible, 3D models, clear timelines to build such a strong context that one fake piece of media loses its impact.
It also means acknowledging the media environment we live in. Everyone's getting information from platforms swimming in AI-generated content already. The authority of traditional documentary evidence is, well, it's shaky.
It is, and sometimes the response involves leaning into that. Look at the documentary Welcome to Chechnya. They actually use deepfake technology to protect the identities of persecuted individuals. But, and this is key, they were totally transparent about it. They told the audience they were doing it.
So they used the tech, but signaled it clearly. Almost like saying we had to alter the surface to protect the deeper truth. That's a complex narrative move.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it points to the longer-term need, educating audiences, fostering media literacy, helping people understand that all media is constructed to some extent, and giving them the tools to question, not just blindly accept or reject.
Okay, so wrapping this up, we've journeyed through this complex landscape of deepfake diplomacy. It's clear the response has to be layered.
Definitely layered. You start with that foundational REAL framework, even acknowledging its weaknesses, particularly in detection. Then comes that crucial technical pivot towards proactive defense watermarking, provenance, building protection in from the start. And finally, there's the ongoing strategic adaptation, strengthening narratives, evolving evidence standards, fortifying trust in a world where seeing isn't always believing anymore.
Which leads us to that final thought for you, our listener, to chew on. We've talked a lot about tech fixes, detection, watermarks, but maybe the bigger question is, what fundamental shift needs to happen in us, in our expectations as an audience? Do we need to globally recalibrate how much we automatically trust photo or video evidence just for society to function when perfect fakes are possible?
That's the profound challenge, isn't it? Because swinging too far the other way, disbelieving everything, could be just as damaging as being fooled by the fakes. Finding that balance, that's the tightrope we have to walk.
A crucial question for the future. We need to thank our sources again for guiding this deep dive. Jay Keatsman, IP McCarthy, TC Keatsman, LW Lee, Mikhail Mustak and his colleagues, Akash Varma, Nadampali and Ajita Ratani, JW So and his co-authors, Rami Mubarak and his team, Craig Height, and Sam Gregory. Their work is invaluable here.
Indeed. Until our next deep dive, everyone, stay safe, stay critical, and stay informed.